It seems that everyone has a story about John Bolton, the new American ambassador to the UN. Probably the best known during his recent failure to get Senate confirmation for his appointment as ambassador is his assertion from a 1994 speech to the Liberal World Federalist Association that, quote, there is no such thing as the United Nations. To underscore his point, Bolton said, quote, if the UN Secretary building in New York lost 10 stories, it wouldn't make a bit of difference, end quote. In July 2002, the Wall Street Journal reported that Bolton's most memorable moment came after the U.S. Supreme Court ordered a halt to the recount when Mr. Bolton strode into a Tallahassee library where the count was still going on and declared, I'm with the Bush-Cheney team, and I'm here to stop the vote. After thanking Bolton for his services, Vice President-elect Cheney was asked what job Bolton would get in the new administration. People ask what John should get, Cheney said. My answer is, anything he wants. During the Bush administration's first year, Bolton persuaded Secretary of State Colin Powell to give him the honor of renouncing the Clinton administration's signature on the treaty establishing the International Criminal Court. Bolton called the moment he signed the letter abrogating Clinton's approval of the ICC, quote, the happiest moment in my government service, end quote. From the early days of the first Bush administration, Bolton mounted a campaign to halt all international constraints on U.S. power and prerogative, fiercely opposing existing and proposed international treaties restricting landmines, child soldiers, biological weapons, nuclear weapons testing, small arms trade, and missile defense. Kevin Drum at the Washington Monthly quotes Reed Hunt, who knew Bolton at Yale and later served as chairman of the Federal Communications Commission from 1993 to 1997. I like him personally, Hunt says. His views are sincerely and passionately held. He's the champion of long-held, deeply sincere views of the right about the United Nations. The goal is the extinction of the organization. Second place is its near death. Third is undermining it so severely as to make its existence irrelevant. Canada's long-standing position in regard to the United Nations is the direct opposite of Bolton's. In 1995, the Foreign Policy White Paper, Canada and the World, stated unambiguously that the UN continues to be the key vehicle for pursuing Canada's global security objectives. Canada can best move forward its global security priorities by working with other member states. The success of the UN is fundamental, therefore, to Canada's future security. So it seems odd that of all the front-running political parties, only the Green Party has a policy on UN reform. The Greens' living platform has a plank in progress on international peace and security, which contains the following statement, quote, to make the UN more effective, we should actively work for the limitation of veto power by the permanent members of the Security Council, by requiring a minimum of 3 members to apply a veto to deny resolutions passed with a greater than 75% majority by the General Assembly. To reflect geopolitical realities, it goes on to address Security Council reform. According to the Greens, there should be an expansion of the permanent membership of the Security Council, with the 3 veto power rule applied through the addition of Japan, Germany, India, Brazil, South Africa, and Indonesia. The Green Party UN reform plank also addresses issues of funding, borrower-creditor balance, WTO transparency, which is not technically a UN issue, the responsibility to protect, membership in the Democracy Caucus, and a number of structural issues. The Conservative Party's policy declaration of March 19, 2005, proposes to give greater priority to refugees identified pursuant to the UN Convention relating to the status of refugees, but says nothing about UN reform. The NDP has tabled a petition on behalf of American war resisters, taken a position on Darfur and Haiti, and challenged the Prime Minister on the changes in Canada's Middle East policy in the UN, but has not commented on UN reform. On the face of it, the Liberal Party appears to have no policy on UN reform. Its issues page on international policy refers to the launch of the Canada Corps in Ukraine and to reinvigorating multilateralism. But in all matters touching on UN reform, the party defers to the Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade. Canada's new official international policy statement acknowledges the need to update a number of multilateral organizations and vows to, quote, contribute ideas, expertise, and resources to reform efforts aimed at improving the effectiveness and legitimacy of existing international institutions, end quote. Canada's UN ambassador, Alan Rock, points out that Canada has identified our broad strategic objectives heading into the reform process, and they include strengthening the multilateral system with the UN at its heart, advancing what the Prime Minister has called the new multilateralism, which includes a leaders' forum based on the G20 of finance ministers and L20, uniting the major global powers, and embracing a vision of collective security that reflects the reality that both security and development are integrally related, and that finally acknowledges the international responsibility to protect. When he was Minister of Foreign Affairs in 1997, Lloyd Axworthy noted the deepening financial crisis that the UN has experienced. He underlined that Canada is one of the handful of members that always pays its annual assessments on time, in full, and without conditions. Richard A. Falk, a professor emeritus of international law at Princeton who has long been associated with creative thinking about international institutions, acknowledges directly that the failure of the United States to meet its financial obligations in recent years has acted as a depressant throughout the UN system. Falk urges that reformers pursue some means of financing that is independent of control by the five permanent and privileged members of the Security Council. He points out that whether to tax transnational financial transactions, or some use of the global commons, or arms sales, has been debated for years. It is important to realize, he adds, that the issue of financing is less about money than about political control. Falk believes that bypassing the UN Charter requirements for Security Council authorization in the launch of the NATO war over Kosovo in early 1999 reinforced the impression that the UN peace and security role was being eclipsed in dangerous ways that left the door open for unregulated geopolitical initiatives. Indeed, Kofi Annan expressed that warning in much stronger terms. On a visit to the war zone, Annan had said, unless the Security Council is restored to its preeminent position as the sole source of legitimacy on the use of force, we are on a dangerous path to anarchy. Later in his annual report to the UN membership, Annan wrote that enforcement actions without Security Council authorization threatened the very core of the international security system. Only the UN Charter provides a universally legal basis for the use of force. In a 1999 article for the Weekly Standard called Kofi Annan's Power Grab, Bolton objected to Annan's description of the United Nations as the sole source of legitimacy on the use of force. According to Bolton, if the United States allows that claim to go unchallenged, its discretion in using force to advance its national interests is likely to be inhibited in the future. Bolton also criticized Bill Clinton for his implicit endorsement of the Annan Doctrine. According to Sarada Iyer of the Malaysian-based Third World Network, a non-governmental organization that closely monitors the UN, quote, development is being moved to the back burner, mostly by spreading the perception that issues surrounding the Millennium Development Goals were agreed upon and that there is nothing to negotiate. The mandate of the summit, she says, was largely to take stock of the success and failures of implementing the MDGs adopted in October 2000. Kumi Naidu of GCAP, the world's largest anti-poverty coalition, says, quote, "Even though most of us in civil society feel the Millennium Development Goals do not go far enough, it still looks like the assessment governments will make in September, if they are honest in their self-evaluations, is that progress in achieving the goals has been dismal." But judging by current trends, says Iyer, the summit may end up focusing on peacekeeping, terrorism, human rights, and reform of the Security Council. To paraphrase The Farm's Stephen Gaskin, we are this season's people. There are no other people this season. If we blow it, it's blown. More in the weeks to come. That's it for this Monday. If you'd like to suggest a story or comment about anything you hear on Monday Morning World Report, email Earthling, that's EARTHLING, at netidea.com. Put Monday Morning World Report in the subject line to make sure I don't mistake your message for spam. I'm Jim Terrell at Kootenai Co-op Radio. Thanks for listening.